This is Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs, editor of Tradition, bringing you a recording of our recent Debate L'Shem Shamayim program. In this inaugural episode, we explore the complexities around the annexation of territories in Judea and Samaria, a matter being hotly debated in Israel, Washington, and around the world. Arguing against annexation is Dr. Yoel Finkelman of the National Library of Israel. Arguing in support, Professor Jeffrey Wolf of Bar-Ilan University. Our moderator is Mrs. Molly Brofsky. This series is produced by the Rabbinical Council of America and the Tradition Journal, with the goal of modeling a culture of listening and learning as we discuss important and difficult topics facing our community and the Jewish world.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the inaugural debate in the Debate L'Shem Shamayim series of the Rabbinical Council of America in conjunction with its journal Tradition. Debate is unfortunately a wounded art in our time. In the general tenor of today, asserting one's views has given people the feeling that anything goes as long as my position wins. Name-calling, vilifying, and rhetoric have replaced thoughtful presentation of ideas, and unfortunately this extends to our Orthodox circle as well. Therefore, this project of Debates L'Shem Shamayim, the purpose of this is to set an example of respectful debate, thoughtful discussion focusing on what is said, listening careful to each other's views, arguing forcefully against it, but respectfully. And the hope is, in a modest way, that this will present a model of behavior while addressing today's current issues. The topic of today's debate is annexation. Should our community support Israel's annexations of parts of Yehuda and Shomron? Because this issue is an Israeli issue, we chose to start with speakers who reside in Israel. While, of course, everyone can have a view on this issue regardless of where they live, there is a difference in perception from people who live in Israel because it reflects their lived experience. And as such, we felt that it was appropriate to have speakers who resided in Israel. My name is Molly Brofsky. I'll be the moderator of the debate. I'm a director of the Shanabet program at Mechelet Mevaseret Yerushalayim, senior faculty member there, and have held various academic and administrative positions. In addition, I hold a master's in social work from Wurzweiler and have a clinical private practice. Our debaters today are Rabbi Professor Jeffrey Wolf, who is an associate professor in the Talmud department at Bar-Ilan University, specializing in the history of halacha, medieval and Renaissance Jewish history, philosophy of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, and the interaction between Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. Rabbi Wolf studied for 9.5 years under Rabbi Soloveitchik, from whom he received smicha in 1982, and he received his PhD in medieval Jewish history from Harvard University. Dr. Yoel Finkelman is curator of the Chaim and Hannah Solomon Judaica Collection at the National Library of Israel. Formerly a lecturer at Bar-Ilan University, Midrashat Lindenbaum, and MMY, he is the author of Strictly Kosher Reading, Popular Literature, and the Condition of Contemporary Orthodoxy, as well as numerous articles on contemporary religious culture in Israel and the United States. Okay, so let's get started. One more thing I want to say. Well, let me just give people the format. The format will be the following. Each side will present their view in 12 minutes. There will be no interruptions during these presentations. Then there will be rebuttal time, 4 minutes each for rebuttal. Then we'll have 10 minutes of engagement, questions and answers between the two speakers. I also want to just mention that we are not coming from a position. This is not rabbinic psak. My impression is that our two speakers are also not military or governmental experts. This is really just a thoughtful dialogue between two thoughtful people of substance and whose ideas are worth listening to. So with that being said, we're going to start alphabetically. And so, Dr. Finkelman, I would be happy to have you start by arguing the side opposed to annexation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Molly. Again, I want to thank everybody for making this happen. And I want to reiterate what was just said, namely that I speak certainly not in the name of the National Library of Israel or in the name of my professional or academic work. I speak only in the name of Ezrach Mudaag, a concerned citizen, as the saying goes, somewhat cynically here in Israel. And I want to explain, basically what I want to do is begin by explaining what I'm not arguing, and then actually make a claim about specifically why I think annexation of territories in Yehuda and Shomron, the West Bank, is not a good idea for Israel's best interest, and why in the long term we ought to be heading in a somewhat different direction. And I'll try to make a claim, an argument in that direction. I want to begin by saying, first of all, that not everybody is terribly clear about what exactly this supposed annexation plan is. So the word annexation is being used, but does it mean applying Israeli law to territories that are not currently formally part of the state of Israel? Full annexation, something in between. What territories are we talking about? Also the Jordan Valley, only heavily populated Jewish cities. All of these questions haven't really been fleshed out. And if you've been following the news for the last couple of days, you realize that there are plenty of rumors suggesting that both the United States government and the Israeli government is less enthusiastic, are less enthusiastic about annexation than they were only a couple of weeks ago. That having been said, I don't want to argue that Yehuda and Shomron, the West Bank, is Palestinian land. I do not want to argue that Jews have no legitimate claim on this territory. Of course, we do. I do not want to argue that if we just make the right moves, peace will be on the horizon and a new Middle East will rise before us. I certainly do not want to make silly claims about the possibility of a multinational state living in peace and harmony, everybody together. And I assume everybody understands what the subtext of that is. I do want to claim, I also want to acknowledge that many Palestinians and much of Palestinian leadership are, simply put, our enemies, who would be more than happy to kill Jews in Israel, outside of Israel, anywhere. They are quite explicit about that, and they have translated words into actions. I certainly don't think, in all of this, that settlements are per se immoral, or we have no business doing them. I just don't think it's a good idea. And I don't think it's a good idea the language I'm going to use is somewhat reminiscent of, except without the vitriol, and I hope without the overstatements, of Yeshayahu Leibovitz. Namely, that what he's concerned about is Israel, he's concerned about Israeli democracy, he's concerned about Israeli morality, he's concerned about the long-term implications for us of holding on to territory. I'm not coming from a great place of sympathy for the Palestinian side, or suggesting that they're innocent. They are, to a very significant degree, responsible for the very difficult situation that they are in. So what I do want to claim by arguing that that annexation is potentially a data point, another step in the direction of something that I see as dangerous and problematic for Israel as a Jewish state. And I'm going to go to a trope that many people have used and suggested over the course of the years. And despite it being somewhat oversimplified, I actually think it's a good heuristic to think about the situation of Israel in Yehuda and Shomron, the West Bank. The heuristic goes as follows. There are three things that Israel wants, and it can have any two of them, but it can't have all three. Israel can be a Jewish state, by which I do not mean a state of halakha, medinat halakha. I don't mean any particularly essentialist definition of what a Jewish state is. I mean a state with a clear Jewish majority in which Jewish cultural interests, language, calendar is part of the public square, is part of the public conversation, is comfortable, is the kind of thing you would absorb from the cultural atmosphere. And again, I don't mean a Jewish state by any particularly legislative or halachic or Torah definition. I just mean a state with a majority of Jews who see a state with a majority of Jews as a culturally valuable thing. I would like that state to be pluralistic, not because I don't have opinions about what Judaism is normatively. I do have such opinions, but I'd like this Jewish state to be live and let live. So one of the things that Israel wants, or that Zionism wants, is a Jewish state. The second thing that Zionism wants, I think, or that Israel wants and would benefit from, is democracy. And by democracy, I mean not only formal kinds of election of leadership, changes of elected leadership every so often. I don't just mean the formal structures of democracy. I mean, here I do mean something a little more essentialist, by which I mean a country that is governed by the people who live in that country.
Five minute warning.
Okay, I'm good. The other thing that Israel has found itself, or at least much of Israel has found itself wanting, the third thing is continued and ongoing security and civilian presence in territories that were conquered in 1967 and are not by law part of the state of Israel. And a necessary correlation of that desire to have a military and civilian presence in sacred Jewish land in the land of Israel is control over roughly 2.5 million people who are non-citizens. And they may be non-citizens because they voted, their leadership voted against the partition plan in 1947, maybe because they were actively involved in military and terrorist attacks against Jews and Zionists. But as a matter of simple fact, 2.5 million people, roughly the Arab population of Yehuda and Shomron, are under Israeli, practically speaking, control and are not citizens of the country. They have only certain kinds of limited autonomous rights that they've gotten with Oslo and certain measures of Palestinian autonomy. Israel can choose to have any two of those three, but it can't choose to have all three. If it wants to be continue to maintain control over 2.5 million non-citizens, then it will not be a democracy, and it will not be a Jewish state, because it will have such a large Palestinian minority, if not at some point majority, that it will cease to be the kind of Jewish state that I think Zionism ought to go for. It can no longer control those 2.5 million citizens, but then it is only a democracy and a Jewish state and does not have control over these historically, culturally, and religiously valuable territories. Or it can be at least formally a democracy and have control over these 2.5 million people and not be a Jewish state. I don't think I did that in the right order, but I think I got all the possibilities. I think that that's a pretty straightforward description of kind of the reality that we live in. And of course, hovering over all of this is security, which is why, frankly speaking, I'm pretty despondent, meaning I don't think that there's any realistic way of achieving peace. And since there's no realistic way of achieving peace in the near future, I can't see an effective withdrawal from any of these territories that are not formally part of the state of Israel today without paying an enormous security price, like rocket fire over Ben Gurion Airport, which only a few short months ago was open for business. And we'd like to see it open for business again. But I think that that more or less leads at least me to the conclusion that taking steps like annexation or expanding Israeli law, formally declaring part of this territory as part of Israel, but not granting citizenship to its Palestinian residents, inevitably results in us no longer being the only democracy in the Middle East. Now, somebody could, I think, reasonably say, well, if I can pick two of those three, I'm not going to pick democracy. And I could hear somebody making that claim. I'm not going to make that claim simply because democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the other ones. And also because I think that the long-term moral, political, and cultural price of maintaining control over 2.5 million people who don't want us to be controlling them is going to genuinely rot us to the core, both internationally and morally. And that's not a result that I want to see happen. So given those two or three, I'd rather us be a Jewish state and a democracy without control over those territories. And I don't think that annexation pushes us in that direction, although I'm not quite sure how we could get to that direction from a security perspective.
Thank you very much. That was actually perfect timing.
I
Professor
try.
Wolf, you got there with 32 seconds to spare.
Wow.
Professor Wolf, yeah. Let's hear the argument in support of annexation.
Well, as I strongly suspected when I heard that y'all was going to be the person I was going to be discussing this with, the distance between the two of us is not all that huge, in terms of many of the points that he raised. It certainly is true that we have no that when we talk about all these things, we have no idea what's going to be. It's like what the Rambam said about I may go back to Ashkenazis. Nobody's going to know how it's going to be until it's going to be, because there are so many different options and so many things that are floating around and rumors and leaks that we don't even know really what we're talking about, and we might not be talking about anything except a theoretical discussion, which is also important. I think that there are a couple of things that I want to start off with. Number one, I think that the use of the word annexation is not appropriate, because the word you want to annex is territories that don't belong to you or to which you have no legitimate claim. If you have a legitimate claim, the proper term is to express or to assert or extend sovereignty or to extend Israeli law, which means basically you've chosen to actualize or to realize your legitimate legal claims. That's number one. And I'm not going to go into a whole lecture about the San Remo conference and the whole debate about the international law, but Israel has a very strong case for that. So I prefer not using the word annex. That would be playing into those who argue in general that we have no legitimate claim on Yehuda Ve'Shomron, or, by the way, to any part of the state of Israel that was outside the 1947 partition borders. Because the truth of the matter is that the same mechanism that would be used if sovereignty is extended was what Ben Gurion used in order to be able to incorporate those parts of mandatory Eretz Yisrael into the state that were conquered by the army when the War of Independence ended in 1949. As far as the plan to add these areas to the sovereign state of Israel, assuming that we have a very strong moral and historical and legal case for it, I don't the issue of democracy. I think is the central consideration. I would love to have another conversation about what democracy means, because I think that we really have to hash out the question of what Justice Barak calls substantive versus formal democracy. I think that's a conversation we have to have, but not it's not for right now, I don't think. Number one, I don't see that the I don't see that that adding to the sovereign state of Israel or adding Jewish law to the Jordan Valley, to the major settlement blocks, to connecting Male Adumim to Jerusalem is going to have any serious impact on the demographics of the state of Israel. On the contrary, the way that, as my friend Shmuel Rosner mentioned in a column that he published in a couple of places actually in the last couple of weeks, by us simply incorporating those parts of Eretz Yisrael, which everybody agrees is going to be ours anyways, into the state, we are basically going to, hopefully, we could very well be breaking up the logjam and saying, look, we are ready to define our borders. We are ready to take a stand and say, this is going to be sovereign Israel, and we will work out something with the Palestinians in terms of their own in terms of their own autonomy or whatever the case might be. By the way, I personally think it's only moral to the degree that Palestinians will be included in those in those actions by a punitive by the government in the future, they have got to be, those Palestinians have got to be given a route to citizenship. There's no such thing as being in the sovereign state of Israel and not being a citizen. So that that has to be part of the deal. We are not talking. I'm not talking, anyways, about wholesale. Inclusion of areas A and B as divided by the Oslo Accords into the sovereign state of Israel. Now, that's number one. Number two. Now what would be the final disposition of the Palestinians? That depends on the Palestinians and depends on us, and as much as it depends on us. Here, I will appeal to a little bit to stuff that I do and get involved with an academic level. You need to be able to have some kind of arrangement. There has to be a switch on the other side, where the law of return and where the illegitimacy of any Jewish Dhimmi Kafir presence on the land of Israel is totally denied. There's nothing to talk about at that point. So basically, we're doing this to try to loosen things up, but also to do it for ourselves. And why for ourselves? Because the situation in Yehuda Ve'Shomron at the moment is absolutely insane in terms of jurisdiction, in terms of municipal planning. This affects the Palestinians also, in terms of allocation of water rights, in terms of gas allocations, in terms of electricity, and the fact that nobody knows who runs anything over here. For the simple, the government doesn't run things that go on Yehuda Shomron. The army does, but the army does it through an organization called the Minhal, the administration, which isn't really responsible to anybody. And as in the case of a lot of pencil paper pushers, nothing ever gets done. I mean, it's Israel anyways, but this is like Israel on steroids in terms of getting anything accomplished. Applying Israeli law to the settlement blocks and to Greater Jerusalem and to the Arab up to Ma'ale Adumim will in fact improve the ability not only of Israeli citizens who live in the Yishuvim, but also the Palestinians who work here and who with whom we have good relations. And the truth of the matter is that as opposed to a lot of people I know who oppose this, I actually know a lot of Palestinians, and they're sort of bemused. They're not sure what to make of this move. One of the things I have to say is the fact that one of the greatest things we could do for them is get them away from the Palestine Authority, which is a rapacious mafia-like organization. And I can give chapter and verse for that, but not now. 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
So the question of democracy, I don't think really comes up. I think that one thing I've noticed in the discussions of this potential move by the Israeli government over the past number of months since the American proposal was set forward, is that what you hear in social media, B, what you hear on the American side of the Atlantic and what you hear over here are totally, totally different things. Many of the people who are arguing against Israel making this move are not doing it out of concern for Israel, the way that Yoel presented it, and concerns that I share, but as an Israeli, and we're friends, but because there is an increasing buy-in by American Jews, especially American Jewish intellectuals, of the Palestinian and the leftist narrative to the extent that Israel actually has not only has no rights to claim or to realize in the Yehuda Ve'Shomron, but in general has no right to, really should be dismantled. There are many. The question is not. I'll mention the Shem HaMeforash. There's not a question of Peter Beinart and what he actually wrote. And who said who was in favor and who bemoaned it. The question is how many people are sitting around their coffee tables or their dinner tables going, you know, he's really right. Which and that kind of hostility towards our very existence is actually clouds the ability to have a straightforward or even constructive discussion about the question of extending our rule, but on the same token of finally breaking the consensus in order to be able to try to mix things up and to move towards some kind of a solution. Interestingly, the Palestinians are now saying that if Israel does this, then that they before that they want to talk. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Finally, I just throw in one last thing, which is totally unrelated to what we said up until now, but I really have to mention. This whole business started with a discussion about declaring Israeli sovereignty in the Jordan Valley, and the north of the Dead Sea and the Jordan Valley. The Jordan Valley, under no circumstances, can ever, for Israel to survive, can ever be in hands that could potentially be either neutral or hostile. That would mean the destruction of the state of Israel. This is something that goes all the way back to the Alon plan, which was advanced explicitly by Yitzhak Rabin, and there were very few Palestinians who lived there, but if you're Jews, if anybody's been there knows it's because it's hot as hell there. But that has to be beyond any kind of discussion, because anybody who knows the Jordan Rift Valley knows, and the Jordanians know it as well. So if they're making noise, it's because they have to make noise. They know that they cannot, under any circumstances, allow for that to happen either, or else they'll be cooked.
Okay, their time. Thank you very much. As you both said, less of a debate and more of a thoughtful dialogue, I would say, between two people. The next part, we're going to give you each to respond. I don't even know if the word rebuttal fits, but perhaps it does. And I just want to mention to anybody who's watching on Facebook, this might be an opportunity for, if you have any questions for either one of our panelists, write them in on the Facebook Live. I will take a look at them and hopefully forward some of them after the rebuttal time. So this might be a time to think and formulate some questions. Okay, so Dr. Finkelman, response.
Okay, so I'll try to make it a pretty direct response such that we can check off the box that says actual debate. But two very quick things that I want to get out of the way. I don't think that this will succeed in defining our borders any more clearly. It will just shift one border, and we're kicking that can down. Nobody knows what our permanent borders might be. I agree, for security reasons, the Jordan Valley is a very complicated issue, but this isn't going to define any borders. And it's going to loosen up the logjam for Israeli bureaucracy within Israeli settlements, which is a valuable thing. Israeli bureaucracy is notorious, and it's not nearly as bad as its reputation. But what's the geopolitical price, and what's the moral price of easing up the bureaucracy for Jews living in Efrat or Har Bracha? Or what will be. The core thing that I really want to argue is that Rabbi Dr. Wolf mentioned this idea that it doesn't really affect democracy. And I can kind of see that, but I want to push back against it, because when any of the maps or any of the ways in which they've been drilling down the details of what this hypothetical annexation / sovereignty might look like, it's always about drawing that map such that Jews are in and Arabs are out. And as a data point in this long story of us continuing to control millions of people who don't want our control, that kind of annexation has everything to do with democracy. It's a way of saying loud and clear, Jews are citizens, Arabs who live under our control are not. And maybe that's a price we have to pay at the moment for security considerations, but let's not fool ourselves into thinking that that's democratic. It's not.
Okay.
So a couple of things. First of all, the truth of the matter is that the idea that there'll be Jews in and Arabs out, because ultimately we hope that some kind of Arab self-rule with whatever kind of sovereignty we can allow for will happen. And it's that simple. And if it's a group like the PLO or Hamas, which is even worse, takes over, if they vote them in, that was their decision. It was the Arabs of Gaza who voted Hamas into office, and not anybody else. So you pick your you vote for who you get, and that's what you end up with. If they wanted to vote out, take over, if they wanted to throw Hamas out, they could do it. There were enough people with all kinds of arms. So in Gaza, the same thing could happen here. That's number one. Number two, nobody, and the whole point, and to add to that, the whole point of this exercise is that the Palestinian Arabs not be part of the state of Israel, they be part of some type of other kind of entity. The problem is, at the moment, security is the issue, because Palestinian culture, I think it's actually Islam. But Palestinian culture is such that if we that were we to do anything more than is envisioned right now, would be absolutely suicidal. Because even though there are shifts that can be seen on the horizon quietly, Michael Melchior likes to talk about the many, many Arab and Muslim leaders that he meets with who tell him all kinds of things that are so wonderful and that we can really make peace with the Jews. But they would never open their mouths to say that because they would be killed or worse. Worse means your families would be killed as well. So that we're not in a situation where anything more than that can be done. If we can begin to regularize our status, that's already, and say what we don't want and who we don't want, that we don't intend to rule over all that entire Palestinian population, then that's actually a step in the right direction. Finally, the fact that as far as the fallout for the rest of the world is concerned, yes, the Europeans will scream and yell. As far as our neighbors are concerned, I rather suspect, yes, that's a chance, but I rather suspect that our neighbors are far more concerned about Iran, who we are apparently, we're apparently working together with them to control the attempts to recreate the Achaemenid Empire throughout the Middle East with the assistance of nuclear weapons, so that I don't think that in terms of our geopolitical standing, it's really going to make all that much of a difference, especially since we're talking about only exercising Israeli sovereignty over areas that almost everyone has agreed are going to remain part of the state of Israel anyways.
Okay, very good. All right, so I'm just checking if we have questions. What I'm going to ask you, because I'll read you one thing that I don't know if you guys can see it. Have there been any concrete plans as to what to do with those who will be uprooted from their homes if annexation were to move forward? I mean, it's not really clear to me who's, are people being going to be uprooted for their homes? I'm not sure what that question is referring to.
Nobody knows.
Not from the Jewish population or from the Arab population.
Yeah, no.
Any plan. I also think that what that shows us is that also we don't have so much clarity about what the plan itself is, which I think is like we're all kind of a little talking in the dark, because it's really not clear what we're talking about. And even to the people who it is clear what they're talking about, when they talk about it, they seem to be talking about different things.
By the way, I would add that one of the forces that came out and said that they want everything, that they're opposed to the plan, is the parts of the Yesha Council,
right?
For whom any kind of compromise is absolutely not acceptable. I am certainly not there.
Right.
I think that the late Arthur Hertzberg, who I really didn't agree with almost everything, called that the politics of irrationality. I think that's absolutely.
Okay, excellent. So the truth is here's a question. If America, and then I want to get back actually to what you just said, Professor Wolf, but let's ask this question first. If American Jewry is moving away from support of Israel, isn't annexation now accelerating this process, which, interestingly, I think we heard more from Professor Wolf than we did from Dr. Finkelman, right? I didn't, unless I missed it, hear Dr. Finkelman say he's expressed concern about that at all. Professor Wolf expressed concern about that, but it didn't necessarily serve as a stumbling block to your desire to apply sovereignty. But any other comments about that question, right? Meaning this question is coming from the perspective of, if we do this, aren't we going to be pushing away support from, this specifically says American Jewry, right? You could also add, you know, the American public or certain parts of the American political body. So any responses to that from either one of you?
Yeah, so two things related to that. First, let me go back to the Yesha Council and the politics of irrationality. I think that a little bit undercuts Dr. Wolf's talking about the idea that what we're trying to do is gain some clarity and make a declaration that we want to control Jews, but we don't want to control them. And we imagine some future in which they're going to have increased control, if not outright statehood. I don't think that there is anybody in the Israeli right, which at the moment is really the dominant right and center right, are the dominant forces in Israeli politics. I don't see any concrete action that's leading toward an eventuality in which we say, we really want you to be autonomous and take over your own lives. We don't want to control
you.
Let me just finish.
The Israeli right is split on that.
Yeah, but they're split on it, I think, at the level of talk in theory, but in practice, you know, nobody's saying,
nobody's saying,
oh, those. Yeah, I think that there's a very significant voice in the right, which, you know, the center right political leadership cannot afford to alienate, or Netanyahu might be learning the price right now of alienating those further to his right. But, you know, there's many, many people in the Israeli right who envision the status quo or something like it as being permanent. Mm-hmm. I think that they're also, that's the politics of irrationality. But I think there are certainly voices who see that. I think the net result is a one state and non-Jewish state and an ongoing conflict. I don't see how that works out well. As far as the American Jewish left, I imagine Dr. Wolf will roughly agree with me that we're losing them. There are things that we could do potentially to slow it down. There are things that we could do to speed it up. But I don't think that we are the primary cause or that we're, you know, I think the conversation about Israel and the American left tells us a great deal about the American left. It doesn't tell us much about the Middle East.
I'll add that I just actually printed out an article by Aryeh Edrei and Doron Meisels from Tel Aviv. They have a series of articles in which they studies asking a very simple question about what happened to the approximately 7-8 million Jews in the Roman Empire at the time of the destruction of the temple. They seem to have fallen off the face of the earth, and they make a very, very cogent case that it was the lack of Jewish literacy that ultimately led to their disappearing over the course of the 100 years after the Churban. And this is the alienation from Israel and Jewish ethnicity and national identity is a deeper problem there, and it's not as Yoel said. I would add in terms of the the Israeli right, I don't agree. I think that there is a large sector of the Israeli right, certainly center right, that is will be pained to the nth to not rule over all of Eretz Israel, but by the same token realizes that that is in favor of some, could they have the Arabs rule themselves. The problem with full sovereignty is that at the moment in the cultural construct that exists, it's lethal for us. So somebody compared it once to holding a wild lion. You're holding its mouth closed. You can't let it go. And you can't close it either. I mean, and that's to a certain degree that where we are now. A lot of people, extremists on both sides, make it difficult to be able to get out of that situation. But I do understand Yoel's despondency or just what'd you say, despondency, despair, whatever. But one of the problems with living in an internet world is the fact that. We lose what actually a lot of Arabs still have, and that's what the ability to live, work, play for the long game. So you need a lot of patience, a lot of emuna. I mean, that's I know you're not supposed to talk religion because Mori's a rabbi. But you have to have a lot of emuna. And as my kids always point out, nothing works here according to normal rules. So
okay, so I want to ask a question that kind of relates to the last thing you said. So there are a couple questions for you, Dr. Wolf. Does Dr. Wolf believe that there is any way that the Palestinians might put together a moderate government during the 4 years allowed by the plan? And I think that question is, if I understand correctly, kind of asking the question you both alluded to theoretically, where's the support on the right, where's the support on the left? Or, you know, so I'm going to ask it to you guys personally, even though, again, it's not at all like Dr. Finkelman is a classic representative of the left-wing view and Dr. Wolf is a classic representative of the white right-wing view, but this was a question that we thought of before the debate that I thought was interesting to ask both of you personally. It's kind of, you know, okay, let me read the question. Would you be happy with a Palestinian state on 70% of Yehuda v'Shomron? Would you feel that this is a stage in our hope to have the entire land? Or would you feel a Jewish state on part of the land is satisfying religiously, but while being short of the entire land? Reading, I think the thrust behind that question is, let's move this into, again, I'm not asking for a bin sock, but I am asking for theological consideration. How do you feel about the idea of 70% sovereignty? And I think that's part of this question that's being asked here, like, okay, put your money where your mouth is. If the Palestinians do get their act together and put together a reasonable idea where they get the other parts of the land, how would you feel about that? So I'll start with you, Dr. Wolf, because it was kind of...
I would... That God promised us both sides of the Jordan, just like the San Remo agreement promised us both sides of the Jordan. And any part of Eretz Yisrael that we don't control is, I would feel like it cut off, I had to cut off my arm. It's that, and it's that intense, it's not in square inch that is not associated with, that is not part of our moledet. If it's a very big if some way it could be found to allow Palestinian autonomy, demilitarized autonomy, in around 70% of Yehuda Shomron, I would be pained to death, but I would at the same time see it as an opportunity. I believe ultimately the Ribono Shel Olam will make sure that we rule all of Eretz Yisrael. I have no doubt in my mind. However, we have paid a very, very serious price for the Hityashvut, which I support. I live in Yishuv. And no, we're not, but this is not Scarsdale on the Jordan, the way that some people wanted to say. But we have paid a very high price. And part of that price is in the self-isolation of the religious community, the Dati Lumi community, that community which is supposed to have bridged all the different parts of Israeli society. And as a result, we are faced with a situation in which we're faced in the middle of a cultural war over exactly how Jewish the country should be. In other words, while we were busy settling Yehuda Shomron, the rest of the country became, part of the country became much more Jewish, but that part of the country which was marginally Jewish has become virulently anti-Jewish. And I don't mean anti-religious, I mean anti-Jewish. To the extent that anything Jewish that happens anywhere is opposed as being religiously coercive. And that for that development, I blame the postmodern West, which invades every corner like as it does with everyone else. But also I blame ourselves, because we have lost the ability to have a common cultural language, to be able to mediate Torah. And if we ultimately believe, as I think we have to believe, that as Rav Soloveitchik used to say, that our right to the land of Israel is absolute, our certificate of residence is dependent on our good behavior, then we have to begin to work to shore ourselves up in those areas of Eretz Yisrael that we do have, to increase Shemiras Mitzvahs, to increase our Batzis Torah, and so on and so forth. So that how you balance that, so therefore we're talking about democratic, in reference to what Yoel said, I said it's another conversation, what presently is considered substantive democracy in the West, in fact, on many issues, collides head on with even the most generous interpretation of Torah. And that's something which we have to deal with, and which I think ultimately will make the decision whether Ribono Shel Olam, how much the Ribono Shel Olam protects us and supports us in our efforts to return to our country.
Okay, so from what you just said, I understood that the answer is you would support 70%.
I would support it, but with a tremendous amount of pain.
Right, because you believe that that there are all kinds of other factors, as you so eloquently described. Okay, so Rabbi Finkelman.
Okay.
Our time's at an end. So,
Yoel.
I'm going to give you the last word. I want to just finish up by saying there are a lot of great questions here that we're not going to have the time to answer. You guys can take a look at them on Facebook yourselves later and maybe figure out a way to respond. But yeah, I'd really be happy to hear your response. And I want to sharpen it by asking you one more thing, because when you said, well, what do we gain by applying sovereignty, right? And you kind of echoed Dr. Wolf and you said, okay, so there'll be less bureaucratic, red tape perhaps to cut through, because right now a citizen of Yehuda Shomron is an Israeli citizen, but their land is not Israeli land, and it's all very complicated. But what I wanted to ask you at the time is, well, is that all we would gain by applying sovereignty? Is there a piece of you that would say, no, applying sovereignty is good, because I would say what the right generally says, which is our relationship with this is our land, and so therefore strengthening our political, I'm not talking about, an ideological perspective, but from a practical perspective, strengthening our hold on the land, if it can come with a reasonable price, that's worth something as well. So with that as part of,
you've said that better than I, you've said that more eloquently than I did.
Yeah, so now you want me to deal with Palestinian state on 70% of the land, cultural wars in the postmodern West, and the question of what we gain theologically, and I've got, what, 90 seconds?
I'll give you 5 minutes.
I'll do the best I can.
Yeah.
Let me begin at the beginning. I don't quite speak religiously and Zionistically the same language as either Jeffrey or Molly just used. And I don't know if that's because I don't even have it in my kishkas anymore, or just because since I play the role of leftist iconoclast in so many circles that it's atrophied. But I don't speak the language of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. I don't speak the language of religious value in sovereignty per se. I am really trying to be as politically and Zionistically pragmatic as possible. If there was a realistic possibility of a Palestinian state on 70%, on 90% of the land in the West Bank, on the equivalent of 100% with land swaps in another area, if there was a realistic possibility, and I emphasize the word realistic possibility, of genuine security under those circumstances, I would grab it in a minute and I would celebrate. There would be a tzvita balev, there would be a certain pain, but I would not feel like I was cutting off an arm. I am thankful enough for what we have in the state of Israel, and the sea change between, you'll pardon the melodrama, 1945 and 1948, that I can live without that land, and the Kaddish Baruch is gonna do what he wants. Jeffrey went off in a direction about cultural war and post-Western, you know, post-modern West and anti-Judah. I disagree about virtually all of those sentences and don't have enough time to get into it.
Anyway, it's another conversation.
Other than as you know very well, I think we need to scratch the word postmodern from the religious Zionist lexicon. Most of the people who use it, present company accepted, have absolutely no idea what it means and wouldn't identify postmodernism if it hit them across the face. It's just a bugaboo. It's just all the bad stuff in the West that we don't like and we're anxious about. I don't think there's a cultural war. I think there's a cultural war on some newspapers and among some spokesmen, which is magnified by Twitter and Facebook. I don't think there's a cultural war. I think there's a lot of shared ground among a plurality of people.
I don't agree. That's what Shmuel Rosner is.
There's another deeper conversation to be.
And I agree with Dr. Wolf that religious Zionism has paid a price for the settler movement. I don't think if it ever was that bridge that it imagined itself as, if you'll permit me, just like the conversation of the American left tells you more about the American left than it does about the Middle East, the conversation within religious Zionism about secular Zionism often tells you more about religious Zionism than it does about the rest of Zionism. And the rhetoric of this bridge, I often, you know, think is rhetoric. But the religious Zionist movement has broadly made a decision to live in isolated communities. I do. It has a lot of advantages. But as Jeffrey mentioned, there's a huge cultural price to pay for that. But just to get us really back to our original topic, yes, I would be very, very happy at the founding of a Palestinian state on whatever land would make that possible and keep us reasonably secure.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank you both for a very rich and engaging conversation. I want to thank the RCA. I want to thank Tradition for this opportunity. I hope that it continues. I hope we continue to have dialogue such as this. I think that whether or not there is a cultural war going on, I would imagine that we can all agree that we are all impoverished by the devolvement of civil discourse. And I think the attempt to engage in civil discourse is extremely valuable, and we should grab it whenever we can. And so therefore, I want to thank you both for participating in this conversation. I want to thank you for watching, and may this continue into the future. And thank you.